from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The deal is done. Cable giant Comcast is ready to buy giant Time Warner Cable for $45 billion. Time Warner Cable is ready to sell. All that's needed now is a green light from Washington from antitrust watchdogs. Should they give it? The stakes are as tangible as your monthly cable bill and as grand as the future of competition and innovation in the U.S. economy, maybe the economy itself. This hour, On Point, weighing the giant Comcast-Time Warner deal. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Would you greenlight this deal? And what's it likely mean for cable subscribers, internet users, the U.S. economy? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New York is Shalini Ramachandran. She covers cable TV and the broadband industry for the Wall Street Journal's Media and Marketing Bureau in New York. Shalini, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
$45.6 billion Comcast would swallow Time Warner Cable. They're already the biggest in this country. Is that an antitrust issue just on the face of it, Shalini? Is it clear that this will be challenged in Washington?
Well, right now it's very clear that there will no doubt be a lengthy review. Even Comcast says that they think it'll take at least a year. And the chances are difficult right now to predict in light of new leadership at the FCC and the DOJ. But there are some facts that are indisputable in that that merger gives the FCC an opportunity to come back at net neutrality rules, which it recently lost in D.C. court. So this could allow it to broaden the scope of how it regulates the Internet through this merger review.
Why does Comcast want to buy Time Warner Cable? Maybe it's obvious, but spell it out for us.
Sure. Well, so the cable industry has been losing subscribers for a few years now, and it faces intense competition from satellite TV providers and from online video folks like Netflix. And cable is inherently regional, whereas satellite's national, and online video like Netflix is international. So they want scale. They want scale to invest in technology. They want scale to push back on rising programming costs that TV channel owners are providing. So this provides them the scale to become a national company, essentially.
Now, they've been losing subscribers, everybody, I guess, in cable has, because why? People are, quote-unquote, cutting the cord, going directly to get their video off the Internet?
There are definitely some people doing that, and others are opting for satellite operator competition like DirecTV or Dish, and others are opting for newer competitors like Verizon Fios and AT&T UVerse, which are the phone company's cable TV units.
What about America? I mean, this isn't just about cable television, obviously. Cable companies provide an awful lot of the broadband internet access service in this country. American broadband access, high-speed broadband internet access, is pretty lousy compared to the rest of the industrialized world. Why is that?
Right.
And does this help or hurt if these two get together?
Well, you could, in one sense, you could argue that it could help because a lot of times the cable operators, which are regional, argue that if they were bigger, they'd be able to invest more to boost those speeds. And Comcast does have the fastest speeds of any of the cable operators. Time Warner Cable didn't come close to it in the speeds that it offered customers. So you could argue it could help. But on the other hand, this would give Comcast huge pricing power because while Comcast does compete with other competitors in it, like satellite and phone and video, in broadband, these cable operators are often only the only choice you have. Maybe you have two other choices. So one could argue this could give a lot of power to them to raise those prices.
Shalini, when the CEO of Comcast came out to talk about this last week, he said, look, there's no competition problem here because, as you say, cable companies are regional, and we don't compete, he said, with Time Warner Cable in any significant region. Is that the only way in which competition might be seen as an issue here?
No, I mean, I think competition would largely be focused on the broadband issue. I think the video, in video market, it's fairly clear that the cable operators have a lot of competition to deal with. But broadband, they have enormous power. And you can already see that Netflix is eyeing this merger as a way to maybe push some more regulation on cable operators because it wants to increase the amount of regulation that those folks face in the Internet.
If they get into a full-on battle over this, what is that likely to look like? I'm reading here David Carr in the New York Times this morning, pointing out that one of the Federal Communications Commission regulators who approved when Comcast bought the NBC Universal deal, that was a huge deal, and not long ago, Meredith Atwell Baker now works for Comcast as a lobbyist. Also pointing out that the FCC itself has had a change in leadership. It's now run by Tom Wheeler. He was previously chief lobbyist for the cable industry. And Comcast has put millions, $18 million into lobbying in 2013 alone. Are they so wired in that they're not going to be seriously, ultimately challenged on this deal by Washington?
It's a good question. Comcast is highly connected with both the Obama administration and these the regulatory firms. I mean, the DOJ antitrust chief right now is the former top private practice antitrust lawyer that represented NBCU in its earlier deal with Comcast. So they are very linked with they're highly connected. Chairman Brian Roberts and their top D.C. executive, David Cohen, golf with the president. But at the end of the day, the FCC and the DOJ have indicated that they're very committed to doing a tough scrutiny. I think what would be more likely is that you'll see that this deal may go through with a lot of concessions that they demand of Comcast.
Concessions like what, Shalini?
Well, in one case, as I mentioned in the internet, Comcast has agreed that it would abide by net neutrality, basically saying we're not going to favor some traffic over another. Even though those rules have been tossed out by the court, Comcast has said it would abide by it till 2018 as part of its previous merger agreement. Now, what could happen is the FCC could broaden the scope of net neutrality. It could say this should cover these internet interconnections called peering, which is a whole other subject that is causing some difficulties right now between online video providers like Netflix and broadband providers like Verizon. So it could bring new regulations to a now unregulated part of the internet.
And could they extend that net neutrality requirement beyond 2018?
That could also be a possibility. Comcast has committed to right now to making sure that whatever it has committed to with net neutrality will also be applied to the Time Warner cable systems it now has.
Well, watch out. Very, very big cable companies in play here. A huge merger on the table and a lot of clout in Washington to make it happen. Of course, they make the argument that it's good for the country. Shalini Ramachandran covers all this for the Wall Street Journal. She's joined us from New York. Shalini, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Here's Comcast Chairman and CEO Brian Roberts talking last Thursday with CNBC about the terms of the Comcast Time Warner Cable deal.
It's a really special transaction for both Time Warner Cable and for Comcast shareholders, our employees, and mostly our customers. The deal is pro-competitive. It's pro-consumer. We're going to be able to bring better products, faster internet, more channels, on-demand, TV everywhere, and a national local platform that's really special.
Really special. Paradise for everybody, says the Comcast CEO. Democratic Minnesota Senator Al Franken, not so sure. Here he is talking with CNN last week.
Here's the biggest cable provider in the country and the second biggest cable provider in the country, and they don't compete anywhere?
Right.
I mean, that's there's not enough competition.
There's not enough, and here would be, I guess, less. Let's dive on in. With us now from New York is Porter Bibb, managing partner at the Merchant Bank MediaTek Capital Partners, 40 years of experience as an investment banker in media, entertainment, and technology ventures, author of Ted Turner, It Ain't As Easy As It Looks. Porter Bibb, welcome to On Point.
It's great to be here, Tom.
And from Washington, Craig Aaron, president and CEO of Free Press and the Free Press Action Fund. He's been outspoken against this deal, author, editor of Changing Media. Craig Aaron, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Porter Bibb, you've been in this business. Is the case we heard made there for this merger, this purchase, credible? This is overall a good deal for everybody.
I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is it going to happen or not happen? And in my opinion, this deal is going to happen. As Salimi and many other critics of the proposed transaction have pointed out, it's going to undergo very, very significant regulatory approvals, but it will happen. And it won't happen just because Brian Roberts is a golfing partner or dinner host of Barack Obama, it will happen because some of the critics who are pointing out that it lessens competition are dead wrong. There is no real competition between Time Warner Cable and Comcast. They operate in completely different zip codes, no overlap. And basically, the economies of scale that this transaction will create should create a better opportunity for the consumer. That, however, is the big – that's the big question, and I'll come back to that when you start criticizing whether this is competitive or not.
We'll definitely come back to it. Craig Aaron, hey, game's up, gig's up, no use in you talking. Anybody else complaining? Porter says it's going to happen. Done deal.
Well, obviously, I disagree. I think this only happens if we let it happen. It has to go through the Justice Department, through the Federal Communications Commission, which is supposed to judge it on the terms, is this deal in the public interest? And I absolutely think it isn't. In all the long list of supposed consumer benefits from this arrangement, you never hear one, which is prices will go down. Comcast has been very clear that's not the case. Prices are going to go up. They're going to go up as fast as they can make them go up. The fact that this is already a cartel and is already split up across the country is not a good reason to allow number one to swallow up number two.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the giant Comcast movie, or Comcast moving to buy giant Time Warner Cable, and the implications for consumers, for the cable business, for broadband, for the U.S. economy. Porter Bibb is with us. He's been in this business for a long time. He's at the Merchant Bank Media Tech Capital Partners. Joins us today from New York. Craig Aaron is here, president and CEO of Free Press, the Free Press Action Fund, very critical of this deal for what it would mean for consumers and innovation. We'll look at that. Last week, deal unveiled, $45.6 billion, Comcast to swallow up Time Warner Cable. Comcast saying all kinds of benefits for everybody at Time Warner. Well, it was all about maximizing shareholder value. Here's a statement from Robert Marcus, chairman, CEO of Time Warner Cable on CNBC's Squawk of the Street last Wednesday.
Plan A, like most management teams, for us was run the business as best we can, execute on our operating plan, and maximize shareholder value by doing that. But always, as stewards of investors' capital, be open to alternative ways of maximizing shareholder value. And I have no doubt that this transaction presents a maximization of shareholder value opportunity for us.
Maximization of shareholder value opportunity, Time Warner Cable would go under the Comcast umbrella. Craig Aaron in Washington, Porter Bibb says this is not about competition. They don't overlap geographically. That was Comcast CEO Brian Roberts, the first point he made. You know, we don't overlap. We don't share zip codes, so this isn't about competition. So what's the problem, Craig?
Well, I think there's several problems. I mean, one is the idea, as I mentioned, that if we've already eliminated most competition and that somehow the solution to that is even less. I think that there's a lot of threat to innovation here. You're talking about taking already the number one cable company, already the number one broadband provider, merging them with number two to where Comcast will become the dominant cable company in two-thirds of the country. And for about half of Americans, Comcast could be the only option for high-speed broadband. That is going to give Comcast incredible gatekeeper power over what we watch, see, hear, and read every day. They're going to be able to dictate what cable channels get carried, even more than they do already. And after 2018, when those net neutrality rules go away, they've been very clear that they have a different version for the future of the internet. It's one that looks a lot like cable TV, where they pick and choose the channels for you, where they pick and choose what websites work and what don't. I think this is a very dangerous deal for consumers. They're going to end up paying a lot more and having a lot fewer choices.
Porter Bibb, I understand the Time Warner Cable chief's argument that this is great for shareholder value for Time Warner shareholders. But for the rest of the country, where this is kind of a public good, it's almost a utility at this point, the digital information flow, why would this be a good deal? We get why Comcast would be able to presumably make more money as well here. Why is it good for the rest of the country?
Well, Tom, you put your finger right on the crux of this deal. It is all about broadband. It's not about cable. Cable television video delivery over the coax is in the sunset years. We've got maybe 5, max 10 years when the cable companies, which are losing hundreds of thousands of subscribers every year, pack it in and everything goes over the top and television and movies are delivered over broadband. So the issue is this is a broadband transaction.
Yeah.
Now, one of the anomalies of this situation is that, and Craig is right to point it out, there is no regulatory oversight right now of broadband. But that is an issue that the FCC is exploring. Congress will be looking at it. The Justice Department will be looking at it, not in light of this transaction, but because the telecom companies, which also deliver broadband, Verizon and AT&T, as well as the smaller broadband companies like T-Mobile and Sprint, they are regulated. They're common carriers. And the reason that net neutrality has lost in the courts, as Salumi mentioned very early in this program, is that there is no regulatory oversight of broadband delivery by cable companies. That will change, and that will be the protection that the consumer is looking for. If you roll the clock back to 1984, when Judge Green broke up AT&T, at that point in 1984, the United States had the best telephone system in the world. We had a oversight and government regulation of costs and charges that the telephone company, AT&T, the single telephone company, imposed on the public. But in return, we got a phenomenal telephone system. We don't have that now. We broke up AT&T and look at what's happened to our telecom system. It's wildly inadequate compared
to other major countries. Point taken. I mean, you could argue about what we paid for that and how and whether that would have served us well in the period, in the storm of innovation that came in telecoms. But just look at broadband, and we're a joke. Our broadband service in this country has a fraction of the speed, if you sort of overall look at Europe or Korea or Japan, and it's many times the cost. Aren't we at the back of the pack? Don't we look like suckers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that's why we're going to have regulatory oversight and government regulation of broadband services and costs.
Why give broadband providers any more power in that equation? Why let Comcast be even bigger when already the setup that we've got has been so poor in serving Americans, not just individually, but the U.S. economy is in second gear here when the rest of the developed world is in fourth or fifth?
Well, we're not without competition, and that's one of the drivers. Look at what Google has got going in Kansas City. They've got a ten times faster broadband service at 10 times less the cost of anybody else.
In one city. Europe has got that going on
Google
all over the place.
Google has the resources. Listen, none of us would complain if Google served the entire world because their user friendliness and their ability to provide a value for services delivered is proven.
Hey, Craig Aaron, no worries. It's going to get a lot bigger, but the government will come in and regulate this, and it'll all be much nicer on the other side of this merger. So just roll over, lay back, Craig.
Well, you know, I fight a lot with Comcast over government regulation all the time here in Washington, D.C., and their record of squelching and stifling even the lightest touch regulation is really unparalleled. I mean, it was Comcast who first sued the FCC, saying they couldn't enforce their net neutrality rules when Comcast got caught illegally blocking lawful file sharing programs. Comcast and the other big telecoms have waged a war ever since the passage of the 96 Telecom Act to undo most of the public interest obligations. That's in many ways how we got into this mess. So I certainly think it's got to either be competition or regulation, ideally a combination of two. But creating this new giant Comcast as the dominant force in most of the country, two-thirds of the country, and certainly, if this deal goes through, the dominant political force in Washington making these decisions makes that road to sensible regulation a lot harder.
What about Porter Bibb is kind of arguing here that Comcast's desire for this deal, its lust for this deal, is going to create a leverage point at which the FCC can come in and, you know, bring in all kinds of regulation that'll make things better. What about that, Craig?
I mean, so far the FCC, and we don't know what the new chairman's going to do yet, but so far the FCC has been scared to regulate anything. They've gone completely in the opposite direction over the last decade plus, creating a lot of the problems we face now, watching us slide down those world rankings you're talking about. You know, the rest of the world does have smarter regulations. They have treated broadband carriers as common carrier services and invested in their networks. We're not doing that here. But right now, companies like Verizon and Comcast are pulling out all the stops to prevent that kind of discussion, to strangely define broadband services under the law, not as telecommunication services or common carrier services. And so I'm afraid that a new giant Comcast is only going to push that even further. So I think this is the juncture where you have to say, you know, this is enough. We have to stop. We don't need to put back together Ma Bell. What we actually need to do is pursue smart competition policy that will actually benefit consumers. And you can see the benefits in things like the AT&T T-Mobile merger. That was a merger when it was announced that we were told was a done deal, was absolutely going to happen. We managed to stop it, to prevent it, and consumers are benefiting. New kinds of pricing plans, lower prices, a maverick competitor. These are the things that directly benefit consumers, not allowing the big guys to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
And of course, the new chairman of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, was a chief lobbyist for the cable industry. So watch this space. Craig Aaron, Porter Bibb, please stand by. Lots of callers here. Cheryl is calling from Bloomington, Illinois. Cheryl, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What I get from this is that they are saying that this is going to be paradise for the shareholders. The shareholders are, I think they should not be the number one consideration here, although I know it's a money-making operation.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Bloomington, as you are aware of, we have only one station here that we can get.
Cable provider, that is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. We have one. And they have a wall around Bloomington. They will not let anyone else, or we cannot subscribe to anyone else. Mediacom is around. We can't get them. We can't get AT&T. And they offer very attractive prices, and they offer good internet and
So you wish you had more competition in your area, like folks in Europe do. Lots of options there, and much lower cost.
Yes, and so this is not going to be a. They say that it's not going to be a lessening of competition. This is going to be a the death knell of competition.
Cheryl, I appreciate your call. Looking for more options there, not fewer, in Bloomington, Illinois. Let me get one. Thank you, Cheryl. One more right here from Boston. George, you're on the air, George.
Tom.
Hi.
George here. Thank you again for your show, and I appreciate your Dickens work as well.
Sure.
Listen, I couldn't agree more with you. I think it's outrageous that we don't have anywhere near the broadband speed that we have over in Europe. And this concept that Brian Roberts believes that this is going to be the panacea for all customers and all the shareholders is outrageous. I think maybe for shareholders, but not for the customers.
But wait a minute, why? I mean, Porter Bibb is here making the case that this is going to be a leverage point at which you can bring in more regulation and improve things.
Well, yeah, you know, if you believe that, I have. To give you a personal experience, but my broadband is although I tested it recently and it seems to be up in the 30 megabytes, 40 megabytes range, I frequently cannot get my Netflix service to work, and I've changed out all my equipment. I've had Comcast come by and take a look at it, and they say, well, you know, we'll continue to come by and take a look at it for $30 for each. For each event, I fear, and I think this is all about broadband service. I don't think that, you know, as one of your authors has pointed out, it's not about the PD service.
So you're having trouble with your 30 megabit. I mean, I'm reading here, what, in Europe, get 1 gigabit service, way more, with unlimited minutes, text messages for $12 a month. Comparable service in the U.S. from $50 to $90 a month just for that. I appreciate your call, George. Porter Bibb, are you describing a path that you think can get us internationally competitive in broadband service for Americans? Because for individuals and for American business, the economy, this is a lousy century to have antiquated broadband service in.
Well, I couldn't agree more, but you have to look at the history of where broadband provision has come from. The cable companies 50 years ago were given regional and municipal monopoly contracts for the simple reason that they had to spend hundreds of millions, if not more, to put cable coax wires in under the street and into houses and apartments.
Yep.
They're still using antiquated coax cable. Fiber is where the Europeans are light years ahead of
us. Comcast is not going to move to fiber if they don't have to, right? That's a huge expense.
At some point, they're going to have to, because there is no contractual monopoly in terms of the broadband provision. And Google will spread into that market. So will other technology companies that don't have to spend an awful lot of money putting wires into the streets. The satellite companies can deliver Wi-Fi everywhere without wires, and Comcast is not going to be there alone charging what they want. There's going to be significant competition going forward.
Craig Aaron, I want to bring that to you. Let me get Brett first here from Laramie, Wyoming. Brett, thanks for calling. What do you think? You're on the air.
Oh, Tom,
hi.
I'm an internet service provider. I'm one of those people that who compete with the cable company, although in my case it happens to be Charter Communications and not Comcast.
Mm-hmm. What do you see in this big merger?
Well, actually, I'm concerned more about the potential ripple effect from the merger. I'm concerned that Mr. Aaron, who's on your show today, and other lobbyists in D.C. will try to use this as justification for increased regulation of small internet providers like me, and the result will be that we won't be able to innovate as much, we won't be able to reach into rural areas, we'll have the additional regulatory burden simply because of the specters raised by the people who are doing telecom policy.
So for you, Brett, I mean, you provide it there in Wyoming. Would you be happier if the Comcast purchase of Time Warner Cable went ahead? Would that make your life better somehow? Or are you just waiting to be gobbled up by them someday? You'll be part of them someday.
I hope not. We do a very different thing than they do. And also, again, as has been mentioned on your show, the cable companies don't overlap. There's a big cable company to compete with now, and if they merged or didn't merge, there'd be a big cable company to compete with then. What I'm concerned about is, again, the effects it'll have on the politics. The other issue, I think, is concerns about the programming. As the cable company, there's always a balance between the producers of video content,
yep,
and the market power of the cable companies, and that shift could cause some problems for me if less of this content appears on the internet because the cable companies have more clout against the content providers.
And they can knock it down. Yeah. We'll look at that. We're coming up on a break here, Brett. I appreciate your call. We'll look at that programming issue as well. But Craig Aaron, there's Brett in Wyoming worried that you're just going to bring on more regulation and stifle innovation, Craig.
Well, I think what we need here is more competition, and I would love to see the competition that Porter Bibb sees coming, but I don't see it right now. 85% of the country has one option for truly high-speed internet service, one option. It's simply not enough. And in that environment where someone like Comcast is so dominant, we need protections. We need the Federal Communications Commission and others to be looking out for internet users, making sure that these big guys can't discriminate, can't block websites. Right now, they can't do that, and this Comcast deal would make it a lot worse.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Giant Comcast moving to buy Giant Time Warner Cable and the implications for consumers, the cable business, broadband, the U.S. economy. Craig Aaron is with us. He's at Free Press and the Free Press Action Fund out of Washington. Very much against this. Says it will reduce competition, reduce innovation. We'll look at programming issues as well. Porter Bibb joins us from New York. He says, look, it's going to happen, and we'll be better off. He's managing partner at the Merchant Bank Media Tech Capital Partners, 40 years of experience as an investment banker in media, entertainment, technology, ventures. Comcast, of course, back in 2009, they snagged NBC Universal, bought it right up. 30 Rock had fun with that. Here's Liz Lemon, played by Tina Fey, and Jack Donaghy, played by Alec Baldwin. They talk about GE's sale of NBC to what they call Cabletown, oblique reference to Comcast in this clip from NBC's 30 Rock. Comcast, the parent company of NBC.
It's happening.
Wow. Out with GE, in with Cabletown. Seems like one of us should sing the circle game right now.
30 years at GE, now it's on to phase two. I am like Keats' stout Cortez, staring at the Pacific with a wild surmise and daring to imagine what new planets might swim into my ken.
Stout Cortez in the John Keats poem. What wild surmise, what may swim into his ken? Well, what's coming here on the cable front if this big one goes through? Of course, there's a lot of programming clout as well. Comcast already with that ownership of NBC. Here's a little bit from last week as all this was talked about. Tim Farrar, analyst at TMF Associates, talking about the Comcast-Time Warner Cable merger on CNBC last week. As Comcast is a parent company of CNBC, you heard the disclaimer right in the middle of the discussion.
Comcast, obviously, for disclosure, is the parent company of CNBC, but how would you think their share price would react to this friendly deal?
I think that people will be relatively positive.
Let's go to the programming front here, maybe. Jerry's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Listen, a long-time listener, great show, great topic today. Yeah, I was a research engineer in the telco and cable industries, and I can tell you that these days the control of the content, I think, is the issue, not the technology, because it's relatively straightforward to build an all-fiber, all-internet protocol network, which could deliver broadcast as well as internet content. But if Comcast controls all of the content, or let's say they have a tremendous amount of leverage. If you build a network, what good is it if it doesn't have MSNBC, Fox, CNN, History Channel?
Well, are they going to have that much clout? If Google Fiber should expand around the country, do you think that Comcast would have so much clout that none of those major things would flow over Google Fiber, really?
Well, maybe Google could compete, but, you know, smaller organizations, I think, would have a very hard time. Maybe Google has enough clout, but it would be technically, it's very easy to build these networks these days. But, you know, how many...
What's going to flow over that network? Jerry, let us pick it up. Craig Aaron, let me come first to you on programming. I mean, right away, presumably, you've got this fear that Comcast, empowered in this way, would look down its sights at Netflix and say, why do we want to give Netflix easy access to all, via our broadband to all these consumers? Maybe put some roadblocks in there. But you hear our caller says, well, over time, Google Fiber, anybody else, if they could get the programming, they could become a competitor to big Comcast, Craig.
Well, I think if they could get the programming is one of the big keys here, because the new giant Comcast will have so much power over programming, and they're going to expect a cut from basically anybody who wants to get onto the system. And I think, you know, their model, again, for the future of the internet isn't that free and open internet, all you can eat, anything you want, anytime. They like the idea where, hey, sure, we'll give you a lot of on-demand programming as long as you keep paying your cable bill. They call that TV Everywhere. So you can watch HBO on demand, but only if you're also giving them $60, $70 a month for cable. That's the model they like. It makes them a lot of money. That's what they want to push here. Netflix, They're a direct competitor. So cable has a lot of incentive to try to slow them down, to interfere, because they know if you use Netflix enough times and it's buffering, it's slow, well, maybe you'll go try out that Comcast product. If they can get away with it, they won't even count their products against your data cap. So this is Comcast's model. How do you put themselves at the center of all these future of media debates where they're the gatekeeper over programming, over the pipes that go into your house? You want Netflix in most of the country, you're going to have to get it via Comcast. They see that as an incredibly powerful position, and it is one. They'll make a ton of money, but it is not one that has a lot of consumer benefit.
Porter Bibb, what on earth would lead Comcast to tap the brakes on putting up barriers to competition like Netflix? Why wouldn't they exert that big market power to privilege their own programming?
Well, I think Craig is overlooking a little bit of recent history in terms of the battle between content providers and distributors, okay, like Comcast and Time Warner. All you have to do is look back to last August when CBS and Time Warner Cable could not come to terms over how much Time Warner Cable would pay CBS to carry the CBS content. CBS went black for a month. Time Warner Cable ended up paying up, doubling the amount of what they call retransmission fees that were paid to CBS, and they lost several hundred thousand subscribers in that process. So the content providers, as your engineer friend from Newton pointed out, they have a lot of leverage. And there are other services besides cable and that are out there. Aereo is now in 12 cities across the United States and expanding very rapidly. It's being challenged by some of the television networks and the cable companies, including Comcast. In the courts, it'll be in April. The Supreme Court's going to decide whether the Aereo system of rented antennas throughout a viewing region are legal or not. And my guess is that the court and most of the people who are looking at this case agree. The court's going to say, yes, Aereo is a viable competitor to cable. They have no wires. They pick up the signals off the air and retransmit them over an antenna that they rent to you so that you pay $12 a month instead of 10 times that to the cable companies.
Craig, here comes so much innovation between Google Fiber and Aereo and all the rest that not to worry, just go.
I mean, I hope we someday see all this competition. We're certainly not seeing it yet, and certainly this deal is not going to encourage it. But I would suggest that this Comcast case is very different, and it's really one of the problems with allowing this merger is that Time Warner Cable is not a programmer. They split off from Time Warner years ago, so they had an incentive to try to keep programming prices down. It didn't always work. They had these showdowns and fights. What you have to remember about Comcast, though, is they are a programmer. They own NBC Universal,
yeah,
so they have a much different set of incentives. And what Comcast wants to do, hey, programming costs are going up. That's great for Comcast. They'll just move the money from one pocket to another. And that's the kind of danger this deal presents, is that Comcast, they've got a little bit of everything, and that means everyone has to go through them. If you want to get a new cable channel, well, you better hope Comcast carries it or you won't have a business model. You want to innovate online? Well, if you had Comcast permission, you'll probably get better service, and on down the line. That's the vision that Comcast sees. That's the economies of scale they're looking to exploit. And it's very bad news for those of us on the other end, just hoping to get the kind of content we want to watch when we want it, download what we want, just go online and experience this great thing that is the internet. We have a very different situation than the one Comcast sees going forward.
Michael in Nashville, Tennessee. Michael, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
Absolutely. This topic is so timely. Kudos to this network for bringing this issue to light. I feel like I'm living in the 14th century out here. I can't get broadband. I've been trying for over 10 years. Every politician I try to contact, the money that we've spent for this stimulus package, nothing's been done. And I feel like this is the issue of our times. Nothing is – the economy these days relies so much on people like me or web development and stuff that can be delivered over the internet.
Sure.
Can't get there if we cannot get it. And I feel like I feel like if I can go to, you know, the mountains of Japan, why can't I get it here?
If you get high speed in the mountains of Japan, but not where you are in Nashville. Michael, I appreciate your call. I mean, it is a real issue for the economy itself in global competition. If we're at the back of the pack on broadband speed and access, the issue is how do we get that out there faster? Does this help or hurt? Jim in Boston. Jim, thank you for calling. You're on.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess my comments are along the competition and innovation theme.
Okay.
My thoughts are that, you know, a bunch of people in Washington aren't going to increase competition by stopping this from going through. You know, I'm thinking of what have been some big antitrust cases going that have gone in the past. Things like General Motors, Microsoft, Pan Am, you know, these big companies that people are just afraid of because they're big. Does the government really step in and promote competition, or is it the markets? Is it that things are changing? Is that the world around us changes?
But you know that monopolies can emerge if we're not careful. That's the reason that we have antitrust legislation authority in the first place. Are you not concerned that moving toward closer to monopoly circumstances in many parts of the country, I mean, this is sort of economics 101, isn't it, Jim, that's not good for competition/innovation?
No, I would agree with your statement, and I'll tell you, I'm no fan of Comcast, not at all. But the statement earlier that, you know, competition is eroding in the cable industry, I've never had more choices in what I can watch on TV. I can do satellite. I have Verizon Fios. I can get Comcast. I think competition is going to improve. And I don't think the choices I have or the speed of the internet, which is available to me, is going to be affected by whether this merger goes through. I think it's, you know, people complaining about the speed of their internet is a separate issue than...
Well, I don't know how it can be separate when cable companies are the number one provider of broadband. But I'm glad for your confidence. I mean, I hope you're right. Of course, it matters how we structure this to be, you know, setting us up for success on that front or not. One more here. Corey in Alexandria, Virginia. Corey, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Tom. I am a former telecom worker. I used to work for the biggest CLEC in the Northeast. I now currently work in web development.
Okay.
I have lived in Brooklyn, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and now Northern Virginia, formerly Arlington, now Alexandria.
Okay.
I have seen Comcast's anti-competitive business practices firsthand. And even just on a technical level, if I wanted to switch providers in the place that I'm currently living in Alexandria, I can't because they've signed contracts. The residential developers have signed contracts with Comcast for 50 years, blocking out anybody else. So because of the frustrating experiences I've had with Comcast, I can't go to AT&T, Verizon, anyone else, unless I do Wi-Fi or WiMAX or whatever.
Yep.
It just frustrates the living daylights out of me. And to hear these conversations going on about, you know, competitive business from this CEO, it just blows my mind that anybody would actually buy this.
I understand what you mean, Corey. And you've got the experience of somebody who's hands-on in the cable business. I mean, let's look at the actual likelihood here. Porter Bibb, we've got a disagreement on the table here about whether this is good or bad.
Indeed.
Yeah. You started out the hour, though, saying, good or bad, it's going to happen. Where does that confidence come from? You've been in this business a long time. Why do you think it's going to happen?
Well, I don't think that there is any problem with monopoly right now because even combined, Time Warner Cable and Comcast do not represent a significant portion of the broadband distribution capabilities of all of the other entities that exist.
43 out of 50 major metros in the country seems like a pretty big number.
But they don't have monopolies. I mean, I live in New York City, and I have a whole array of opportunities to get broadband away from just Time Warner Cable, which has the contractual monopoly on coax cable in the city.
So
the real issue here is not the monopoly issue. It's network neutrality. And has been brought out several times today. Comcast is already working under concessions they made when they bought NBC Universal in 2009. They go to 2018 with an agreement to maintain network neutrality. That's a big, big, big issue. And it's not just the FCC. It's going to have to take legislation from Congress. And people like critics like of this transaction, like Senator Franken, Al Franken, ought to be talking about making broadband distribution a common carrier regulated service. And that's where the public is going to be protected.
Craig, Aaron, you've already got concern that politicians are a bit unwilling to do that, first because Comcast pours in so much money, $18 million last year, into lobbying. Second, because they've just got clout. I mean, they own a whole television network, for heaven's sakes, just for starters. How do you see this playing out? A lot of people are saying this is going to happen. It's kind of a done deal. They've got power. They've got clout. And there's the argument that Porter Bibb makes that it's fine. This is going through, Craig.
Well, so the problem I have with Porter's argument is that the reason we don't have net neutrality right now is because of companies like Comcast, and actually specifically Comcast, which have gone out of their way to attack net neutrality regulations, which were the companies originally filing suit to get rid of them. In a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, they're the ones who've really owned the FCC and prevented us from having those baseline protections. No one's a bigger advocate for net neutrality than I am. Nobody wants to see it more. I just think it's a lot harder to get and save if we have a new giant Comcast.
But the politics, I mean, the CEO of Comcast golfs with President Obama, had him over, at his place in Martha's Vineyard.
Comcast has huge clout in Washington and the whole media telecom industry. I mean, people forget that this is an industry that spends as much as anybody in Washington, except maybe the pharmaceutical drug industry. There are some countervailing signs. The Obama administration has done some antitrust enforcement. They stopped the AT&T T-Mobile merger. The Federal Communications Commission is supposed to defend the public interest. I don't think this deal can be in the public interest. But the only way it stops is if all these callers and a lot more call their representatives and say, we don't want this deal to happen.
What's an early tell on this, Craig? What should we look for in the months ahead to imagine whether or not this is going to get a green light?
Well, I think you got to have to read the tea leaves at the Justice Department and how quickly they're moving, how much pressure comes from Capitol Hill. There's some hearings already scheduled. And what kind of signals does the FCC send, especially around issues like net neutrality, about how seriously they're going to dig in on this deal. But the biggest answer is going to be, how angry do the American people get about this deal and demand that leaders in Washington do something about it?
Craig Aaron at Free Press, Porter Bibb at Media Tech Capital Partners. Thank you to you both. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.